Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
What's good, internet? It is Friday, January 15th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 371. I cannot believe we are already halfway through January. I'm your host, Austin Walker. I'm joined today by Ricardo Contreras.
I thought you were going to say half through. My brain went halfway through the year. It's been half a year already since fucking 2021
started. Is this 13 Sentinels? Did I fall into this?
Yeah. We jumped ahead, Patrick. Things got worse. Look outside your window. Uh-oh. That was Patrick Klepek. Also here with us, Rob.
Yeah, I hope this is acceptable with my non-fancy lighting, Austin. I know recently you got to see me.
I did.
Lit in my office, and
we can't say why.
You just saw me beautifully lit.
I just saw Patrick beautiful, like hundreds of dollars of lighting equipment.
$589 of lighting equipment, including one of which was, in theory, it's a tripod. But it was
tripod.
Normally you would put a light that is meant to, you know, light your face, you know, a decent distance behind you. There was just a wall. And so I had a tripod that was leaning off against the wall, and then the light was tilted down. And then also I had to like loosen it so it could go all the way to the ceiling so that it could get enough distance that it didn't actually look like a light.
You're like completely blown out. You're holding a lamp above your head. Yeah.
So I had to warn somebody, like, if something crashes on me, I don't think it's likely, but it's at least like within the realm of possibility that a light will fall on me in the next 45 minutes.
It looked good. The lighting was good.
This is why this is a union trade. Right. If you do not want to be killed by either electrocution or hundreds of pounds of lighting equipment falling on you, hire somebody who's
you need a best boy
who's got their card.
Yeah. Now, granted, that was offered to me that there could be someone that could come, but I said no to it because of COVID and my mom. It was offered to have a competent human being set these lights up, and I said no. Just draw me a diagram in MS Paint, and I'll figure it out.
That's fucking wild. I guess that they probably just have people in the area that they can call. Is that how?
Yeah, they were just like, I don't know, we'll find someone in Chicago. Like,
there's definitely freelancers that are just, you know, whatever job comes along in every state, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. How's everyone doing? Are we all glad this week is over? We made it through another one. I guess top of the morning business. We will not be here on Monday, right? Monday is off. Is that true?
Yes.
Yep.
So look forward to not hearing us in a few days, and we'll be back at the end of the week. Anyone get up to anything this week? I know we're still kind of in that period where we have a lot of free time because there's no new releases. We can kind of revisit old stuff. We can kind of.
Let's go to Rob. I've heard the private adventures of Rob Zachney. I want to hear
not.
Him.
I've heard none of
say
this.
Them publicly.
All when Rob told us what he had, the thing he told us was Rob's week of streaming games. Rob.
Yeah. Okay. So you know how I've had recurring issues with my PC for about 2 years? Like every 6 months, I'm like, hey, my PC is randomly hardlocking.
Yes. And in fact, I recall recording an episode of our Star Wars podcast the other day, More Civilized Age. And we lost you for 25 minutes as your computer just finally shit the bed.
Yeah, and that was actually the last time I used it for anything. The moment where I was like, this is now unusable.
No.
Because it's one of those things where has always been doing random hard locks for a long time, and just like, but in waves, right? Like every time I've gone through a decent amount of troubleshooting, the problem, Michigan J frogs its way out of existence and stops happening. Now, for young people, there was a very popular cartoon where there's like a, you know, dead frog that you dissect, but like this frog would stand up and start singing, "Hello, my honey, hello, my darling." We watched it when we were kids. We loved it.
But whenever anybody came around, it just went back to being a regular frog that sat there.
Right. There was always one poor schmuck who was aware that this frog was a miraculous like being. And then everyone else just saw a dead frog. Anyway, that's kind of what this problem was, where every time I would start really trying to do the process of narrowing down what the hell was happening, it would completely disappear. And so at various points, I was convinced that it was a bad uninterruptible power supply. So I replaced that and the problem went away for 6 months and then it came back and then I just reduced my overclock and it stopped happening for like another 6 months and then it came back. Then there were a bunch of hardware changes I made and it stopped again. And now but this time the overclock, basically I had to un-overclock the PC. It was still happening. And it's one of those things where I think if I had a test bench PC where you could swap in like one part to test it and you know the machine's good other than that, this would probably take like an afternoon to diagnose. But just trying to do it with the PC that has like any number of these possible faults is a nightmare. And I just sort of hit a point where I was like, this processor's old as hell. This motherboard's pretty old. I'm just like, the PC is unusable. It's time. And then I discovered something else, which is that this is not a good time to build a PC.
Because the things that you know you want are not available?
Right. Basically, everything is a 3080 now, which is to say everything is in such high demand that, like, hoarders are basically taking the stuff and selling it on the secondary market. And that's really hit CPUs hard, especially because right now I had been aware that AMD had like closed the gap with Intel. I was unaware that they'd basically blown Intel's doors off.
Yeah. People love those Ryzens.
Yeah. And I mean, I get why. I guess like Intel has sort of stayed on an old fabrication process. And so they have just older tech. And Ryzen has rolled out a new one in addition to new system architecture, and apparently it just crushes the Intel. So Intel is there trying to make up the gap by basically throwing more power and heat through the CPU, which I don't know that sounds good. So like Intel's you can get any Intel you want. They're shooting it out of a cannon, like a t-shirt. If you want one of them Ryzen.
I would not want to be in that arena. That would be very painful.
I don't know. I suppose if you're a Bitcoin miner, though, that'd be a good arena to be in. Be like, woo, yeah, over here, Intel, love 14 nanometer fab.
Did you see that? Did you see that New York Times article about the person who has two more guesses on $200 million in Bitcoin?
Oh, my God, I can't even think about it. Dude, I can't even think about it.
This is common, the people had like bought Bitcoin 10 years ago.
Yeah, but the
didn't
amount
think
of
about
money,
it, but they the bought
money
like
is so high. I have the quote right here.
Yes, please hit us.
Stefan Thomas, a German-born programmer living in San Francisco, has two guesses left to figure out a password that is worth, as of this week, about $220 million. The password will let him unlock a small hard drive known as Iron Key, which contains the private keys to a digital wallet that holds 7,002 Bitcoin. While the price on Bitcoin dropped sharply on Monday, it's still more than 50% up from just a month ago when it passed its previous all-time high at around $20,000. The problem is that Mr. Thomas years ago lost the paper where he wrote down the password for his Iron Key, which gives users 10 guesses before it seizes up and encrypts its contents forever. He has since tried 8 of his most commonly used password formulations to no avail. I would just lay in bed and think about it, Mr. Thomas said. Then I would go to the computer with some new strategy, and it wouldn't work, and I would be desperate again.
You know what's the fucking worst? You know what's the fucking worst about that thing? Is that if you type it, you won't even know, right?
Yeah,
that's one of your fucking chances gone.
That's what I thought about. Because how often you're like, oh, shit, caps lock.
Yeah.
It's like one.
Fuck.
I think if I'm this dude, and Rob will get right back, I'm sorry, I would sell this thing for $50 million to a bank or
even
a
$1 million, right? Like,
no, I want
like
more.
That's
it's worth 220. I need 50.
Yeah, I want to. I will give you a list of every password I've ever used that I can remember.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. Yes.
You gotta have to change.
Somebody has access to like hundreds of millions of dollars where they're like, I will take that bet. I'll take that bet.
Right.
Like 50 million
maybe 10 like, million. I'd be good. Now I'm like talking myself down from that 50. 50 is a lot.
Let's just point out Austin Walker saying wouldn't settle for a mil. Like that's where he's at right now.
It's worth 220.
Austin leaves Vice and he's like, well, you know, I don't know if I'll settle for
that. Money isn't coming from regular people. It's coming from the ultra rich. I'm gonna take them for all their fucking worth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am kind of curious as well how this all happened. Cause my like I have you always hear these stories about like Uber core power users locking themselves out of their shit, or worse, like accidentally like locking loved ones out of important stuff, which is always tragic when you hear about it, right? Where it's like, oh, you know, my partner set up everything in our lives and now I can't access any of it because it's so like, you know, so secured that nobody can get into it but this one person.
That's why I have like a 1Password family account. I was like, I know, Katie, you don't fully understand how this app works, but I need you to have access to all of my stuff in case something was to happen.
Yeah, no, we've got the 1Password, like everything critical is, like everything's accessible for that reason. Password managers, they're great. Probably should have used one if you were doing that Bitcoin thing.
Did they, was that even a thing back then?
Yeah, they're really,
we don't know
they've
when
been
he
around
invested.
For a while.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. Like,
but maybe not when he bought that, right? You know, because like I remember listening to I was listening to a sports podcast around the NFL that I've listened to for years. And like one of their producers was someone who, I might be bungling the story a little bit, but I believe they like bought Bitcoin, like, I don't know, to buy drugs. And then it just sat there like unused for years. And then when they came back, they read an article that was like, oh, Bitcoin's worth a lot now. And just like whatever tiny amount they had bought turned into like $50,000, like, you know, because it had just sat there for 8 years.
Right.
On the other hand, I do kind of like hearing stories about people losing fortunes in Bitcoin because, like, it's one of the worst things, right? Like, it's just,
Bitcoin fans
are terrible.
Yes, those are your Elon Musk and Bitcoin Venn diagram, like, heavy overlap.
Yeah, like, and that's a broad generalization. I'm sure there's plenty of nice people who use Bitcoin and everything.
I almost bought Bitcoin once.
I'm mad I didn't.
Yeah,
I remember it being
at like
2008. Dude, I remember it was less than that. I remember in 2008, I was making freelance money for basically writing for content farms and being like, I had to write this article about Bitcoin today. That sounds all right. Maybe that'll one day be worth a lot of money. I should just buy like, let me just buy like 10 Bitcoin. I didn't do it and I wish I had.
Even 5 years ago when they were like, Bitcoin's worth a lot now. If you just spent $1,000, you'd be sitting pretty right now.
But maybe the purchase of such a Bitcoin would have turned me into a Bitcoin person. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, would I have paid to see the Bitcoin corruption of Austin Walker?
Anyway, Rob.
I'm just imagining, like, if Bitcoin became your new Gundam. It would be bad.
It'd be bad. The thing is, I was just talking about this with somebody else. I think I hope I did a good job of learning in my late 20s, early 30s to shut the fuck up about things I like and care about, except for in circumstances where it's entertaining or meaningful because I'm talking to other people who care about it. Like, I'm not, like, skydiving into conversations to be like, have you heard about Gundam lately? I know we just launched a Star Wars podcast, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not forcing my interest on other people.
A podcast is often
the only
thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's the only thing that makes any sort of niche interest annoying is the sort of like insistence that this is the most important thing in the world from someone else. And that if you don't understand it, then you're missing out or something. And that is if I just like passively like was like into Bitcoin on the side and like I gave y'all updates when something funny happened in that world, I think I'd be okay.
But Austin, see, the thing is, what you said there is like you learned the lesson right around the time you would have been getting into Bitcoin. Magic of Bitcoin is it would have disabled the ability to learn that lesson because you would have been like, I'm just watching the number go up and down. Oh man, this is some heady stuff. And then you'd just be Austin Walker, Bitcoin guy. Ugh, oh, you're into Dogecoin? Get out of here.
Get the fuck. I mean, on that, I say that anyway. Get the fuck out of here, Dogecoin. Meme coins have no place in the marketplace. Anyway.
Yeah. So, anyway, so, like, it's not just CPUs. Like, everything is marked up because tons of people, I suspect, are also in major quarantine and they're like, I need my entertainment box to be really good.
The Democrats won the Senate. $2,000 is coming my way. Time to buy a computer.
Right.
That's the COVID pittance too, is almost here. And there's never been a better time to build a gaming PC before your landlord tries to garnish your checking account. Anyway, so things are marked up as hell and they will take forever to arrive. And in the meantime, like I just have my laptops really. And that's it. Naturally, the minute my PC stopped working, I was like, I want to play all the strategy games. Like hadn't really been messing with them too much of late. But the minute they became unavailable, I was like, damn, I want to play some Total War. Oh, you know what sounds good is, you know, XCOM, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered that, well, I have GeForce Now. And it was really good last spring. And I would have used it a lot, except that I stopped traveling, so it became less important to use it. Why would I do that? So I fired it back up and realized that, like, I had sort of dimly been aware that the minute GeForce Now kind of came out of beta and entered the public conversation, instantly you had publishers and developers being like, well, I didn't say you could launch my games through GeForce Now. I didn't opt into this. Because what it used to let you do was you just run an instance of Steam on a GeForce, like on an NVIDIA cloud machine, and then you just play your Steam library through that. And it works really, really well. Like I talked about this last year. It was awesome. And it occurred to me, like, this was its moment. Like, if that functionality were still here, I probably could have ridden out some of these bad prices and just been like, I'm going to put off getting a new PC, and I'll just continue to record podcasts off this laptop. It's not ideal, but I can, you know, I can use GeForce Now as, like, a pretty nice bridge to when it makes sense to actually buy a PC, and I've saved money to do that.
Does it break embargo if you redeem a code on your Steam account and then play it through a GeForce Now instance?
Ooh.
I mean, I doubt it. Because usually those embargoes are like, keep your profile private.
Yeah. Right.
GeForce doesn't fuck with that. Doesn't care if your profile's private.
It's an interesting thing I hadn't really thought about, like, if you had kept that situation. You can't do that, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And so, like, the GeForce Now library is not bad, but it's, like, one of those weird things where there's a world of difference between here's a bunch of popular games that people play these days versus your Steam library with your stuff. And so it was kind of weird because there's lots of stuff on GeForce Now where I'm kind of looking at it like, I don't know that I really want to play that through a streaming PC setup. I just kind of want to play. Honestly, it's the silliest thing. You know what I got really hung up on was Unity of Command 2. The new graphics on Unity of Command 2, which is a hex war game.
Yeah.
The new graphics are just advanced enough that my laptops don't really love running that game.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, I'm sorry, I need to unlock the power of the cloud so I can move these little icons around this hex map. I need to put me on the mainframe, NVIDIA. I need to liberate Italy. So I got kind of hung up on that, and I did find some cool stuff to play, but I was like, I don't like these limitations. Let me see what else is out there. And it turns out that GeForce Now has this quality bar where, like, you run it and it's like you're just running a PC natively, like locally. And it's just kind of the interface, the artifice of the stream kind of drops away and it just feels like you're on your PC, and it's really, really cool. And I was like, well, surely that, like, streaming is streaming. There's probably no magic sauce, really, that NVIDIA is using. And that may be true, but it turns out getting to that quality bar right now so far is not easy. I tried out a service called Shadow, which has already rolled out in Europe. It's rolling out now in the US. And its whole deal is that, you know, it's a cloud PC business. You access a virtual machine and you can do whatever you want with it. And they are marketing to gamers, but when I tried it, it was terrible. It's one of those things that's hard to work out. Like, I had passed all my bandwidth checks. It was like, you should have a great experience. The minute I actually connect to a machine, I start getting latency warnings and the connection's not real good. So somewhere in there, it's not working real well. The PC I logged into did not seem like the most modern machine in the world. Like, it had a Windows Explorer icon there. And it was like, hey, do you ever heard of Edge? You want to try Edge? And I was like, that seems like an update that should have been pushed a while ago.
Yeah.
I don't know why this desktop is rendering at 800 by 600. Seem good.
Maybe you just got connected to like a real bad PC. Maybe you just got connected to your own PC.
No, I checked. I was like, what the fuck hardware am I running? No, it was like a bunch of like server shard stuff. Clearly that. It's one of those things where they were very upfront. They are still rolling out. They're still building data centers as fast as they can. But I am not sure there are enough resources to do this for them right now. And certainly, like, when I tried to install stuff, I was starting to run into permissions problems where it's like, you can't install stuff on this hard drive. And I was like, what are we doing here?
I will say I used it like a year and a half ago and had like zero problems with it. So it was like jarring when I logged in. It was like, yeah, here's like a fresh Windows install. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, I guess I really am just renting, like someone just jacked me into a PC. And I've heard good things about it. So it seems like that maybe the typical Shadow experience is somewhere between like your awful experience and it also, hadn't you said like they have like localized servers, but they're not in your region yet or something that? I remember you mentioned something.
Yeah, I chatted
like
with them the other day, and they did mention that they do have four data centers, like what you'd expect: Texas, California, Chicago, and New York. But it's interesting enough, when you go to sign up for Shadow, you are warned that, like, hey, here's when the service will be available in your area. And apparently, that is not that the service does not exist in your area. It is that when you go to sign up, you're basically putting yourself in queue for when they think they have the capacity to serve you. Mm. They were like, people think we keep changing the dates. We're not changing the dates. It's when you sign up, you sort of go in line, and we're just using this to sort of gate the inflow of users to match our capacity. Because I was able to get like upgraded to the press access thing, like, this is not supposed to be Massachusetts for like 2 months. So it is possible that like they're just slammed in the Northeast. And that could be some of the stuff behind my bad morning. I'll give it another shot, because I am curious if I can sort of work my way through some of these issues. Because it's a cool idea. And chatting with them, obviously they're evangelists about this stuff, but you know, I do kind of get where cloud PC people are coming from to an extent, which is that there are valid concerns about energy usage and like the impact of things like this, but their central argument is an individual PC is an enormously inefficient thing where it is still drawing a lot of power when it's not really in use. It is exerting a lot of power to cool itself off when that is much easier in a data center configuration. So I do get it. And you talk to these folks, and their belief is eventually, increasingly, you'll just be able to have your PC live in the cloud. And I do get that. Right now, it still feels like that is a ways off.
Until my internet is stable, that will never be the case for me. I live in a big city, and every night for the last like 2 weeks now, after midnight, my internet just goes to complete shit, and I don't have an option. There's no one else I can go to as a high-speed internet provider in my building. And that is like, well, I guess I can't ever go to a cloud gaming thing because I'll just be fucked.
Like, I have really, really, even though I'm stuck with Comcast, like it's exceptionally fast. Like the money part of it is not great, but it's exceptionally fast. And I was playing 13 Sentinels a night or two ago on my couch and also had my Switch on the table next to me and had queued up a bunch of games to download. And just kind of, I like put in those, dumped in those codes, like had those games set to download over the next hour and went back to playing 13 Sentinels. Just completely forgot the Switch was there. And then all of a sudden, like 13 Sentinels completely unplayable. It's just like, yo, your connection is shit, man. Like you can't do anything. I'm like changing the resolution. Like I like went through the, I actually took a network adapter and like finally hardwired my PS5, which is something I should have done before. Like I did all this extra work and I was like, reboot the router, do all that stuff. It's like, all right, I did some really good, important cleaning up of my network, like sort of like utility in the house. Sat down with it again and was still like, yeah, like this is just not going to work. And I was like, oh, that Switch is downloading right next to me at like, you know, 60 gigs of shit.
Right.
I paused those downloads and was like, instantly, you know, you're good. Which is like goes to show you can have like a really good connection, hardwired, like do all the quote unquote stuff.
Right. And then...
It only takes like one device futzing with your bandwidth and, you know, you introduce, and I'm in a house where everyone was asleep and, you know, put that in an apartment or, you know, with roommates or bigger families. And it's just easy to see how all this stuff feels like it's right there from a foundational, like tech is there.
So many failure points.
But yeah, functionally it feels like it's 5 years off from being like practically useful for a lot of people.
And because even so, one thing that was kind of cool about when I was using GeForce Now the other morning was it was one of those like really great moments where you're like, how it was kind of an unintentional stress test, because my partner was connected to a video conference that she was taking part in. I think usually on any given day, there's some virtual machine stuff doing at her office. I was also uploading the entire contents of my like long-term media storage to Google because,
even Rob has to rub his face because he's about to admit something to us.
I'm ready.
I got my fingers are tingling. Like I cannot wait. I don't even know what this is.
You saw this whole conversation play out in the Discord we're in with some of the Giant Bomb folks, right? Where, like, I bring a simple problem.
I don't think Patrick is in the tech channel in that chat.
No, that one's muted. I don't know that one.
Come on.
Come on, man. So I'm in that channel a lot. Because it is extremely on everyone's bullshit channel. But so, yeah, the thing is, I have never really found a archival media storage solution that I've really been happy with. Like, I've got an external hard drive that I never remember to plug in, regularly do backups and imaging.
Yes.
Never do that. Like, I always intend to. I do it once. And then I'm like, well, I don't know. And then because you don't do it regularly, you plug it in the next time, there's tons of conflicts. It's like, hey, what's this file doesn't match this? Like, what's going on here? And I'm like, oh, I don't know which copy is more valid, right? Like things have changed. Which is the reference here that I should care about? And I end up like being like, yeah, you know, just let's be safe. Let's save it all. And that's how I end up with like two copies of my media library, like living side by side. And then suddenly everything's just terrible. So there's that. And so I've like, this is how my brain works. I'm like, oh man, I can't trust my PC. Like my PC is in rough shape. I've got a lot of things on that hard drive that if that hard drive were to suddenly go, I'd be in deep trouble. I should just back that up. What I really need is a network attached storage.
Oh my God. What is that?
That's what I should do.
I've heard that phrase, but I don't know what that means.
Okay. So basically, there's a few ways you can go about it, but network attached storage is like a tiny little long-term data storage server that lives in your house on your network.
So you're just building a mini PC that is just explicitly just meant to be a storage unit. Okay. All right,
yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah. The thing is, generally these things, I guess, are running Linux, And also, if you're going to get much out of it, like if it's going to truly be secure, you probably want to do some file integrity stuff so that you are making sure that your files don't get corrupted just over time.
Sure.
As wear and tear occurs on a hard drive, or you know, you have to worry about bit decay. And so that means that effectively, like, you have to have this really, everything kind of has to be saved twice and checked against itself in order to make sure that, like, your files are truly backed up. And doing this all yourself, and a lot of the folks that are in that channel love mm-hmm. to do everything by themselves. Like,
whereas I feel like every podcast is like, hey, here's this cloud app. You just sign up and just
hit upload.
Backblaze has got you. I feel like I heard Backblaze.
We'll talk about Backblaze in a second.
Oh my fucking god. Let's go. Can we? A moment ago, we were dragging What If Austin Got Into Crypto, but right in front of us, for real, was What If Rob Got Into
Crypto. Rob just said bit decay.
These are real problems affecting real people.
You've been talking to Brad Shoemaker way too much, is what I've learned from this conversation.
So, yes, maybe. I think here's the problem. Here's one of many problems. Brad loves to mess with all this shit. I just want the end result. I'm just I just want this shit to be awesome.
Tell me what to go buy and what to go do.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, so I was like, oh, I don't know, I can't get into this. And I realized the alternative to building my own machine would be to buy sort of a ready-made one, which are hundreds of dollars before you add in the hard drives. And that was vetoed. And then someone at Motherboard, I'm not going to name names, was like, hey, why don't you just let Big Brother Google take care of you?
Wow.
And I was like, we can't say that. Like, we work at Motherboard. Like, the tech monopolies are bad. Like, these companies are all kind of evil. And this person was like, yeah, no, they are. I got it. I believe that, yes. But also, sometimes you just got to let all that go. And just put that shit in the cloud and never think about it. I've got one hard drive. It does everything. And everything else is in the cloud and I don't care. And I was like, man, that sounds like a really liberating life. That sounds like true freedom. Just lived in the enclosed gardens of a massive tech monopoly.
Well, and if you're about to get hit with data caps and pay $30 a month extra to be able to keep living that unlimited cap life anyway, you might as well just walk through the pearly data gates.
Yeah. So I did. I was like, all right, give me the 2 terabytes of storage. Fuck it.
Wow.
This will bridge us to whatever my permanent setup is. Backblaze does seem cool. Their rates seem good, but long term, I'm probably going to be storing off more than one PC, and Backblaze doesn't seem to like that. The other thing is their upload rate is pretty slow. And I was in a situation where I was like, I need to get like a terabyte of stuff off this PC like ASAP.
Yeah, they're meant to be like, hey, quietly over the next 30 days, we'll take care of your stuff.
And I'm like, I need this done like tomorrow. So I was playing GeForce Now while I was uploading, sort of maxing out my data upload. There's a video conference going on. There's some virtual machine stuff happening. And then I'm playing GeForce Now and it was awesome. And it occurs to me that, one, I'm glad I ended up being forced to buy a new router last year. But two, there's a lot you can do on your side to make these things better, but like, you're still at the mercy of like, what is the ISP infrastructure between mm-hmm. you and whatever you're talking to? And that's the thing that seems like it's going to be a big problem, right? Because there are so many points of failure that you do not control and are being run by companies that fundamentally don't give a shit. You know, Comcast, I think like they love to try to upsell people in my building. I'm like, you get more data. Apparently there's a very nice connection that this building has. But you never realize those speeds because like, as soon as you hit like, you know, the main trunk line or whatever, things kind of fall to shit.
Right.
And so, you know, it's one of those things where you can buy for a lot of theoretical, performance, but in terms of your ability to do things, like I just want to talk to a random PC in the cloud somewhere and have it be like immediate and responsive, that seems tough.
So now is your plan to like, how you're on your laptop currently, you still don't have the PC. Are you committing to buying the intel and just going down the road of what's available, or are you now going to play this kind of crapshoot game of trying to get piece by piece what you need to build a new machine?
I found a good Ryzen.
Okay.
And so, like, this is as you might expect, this problem is at its worst at the very high end. You're still paying markups pretty much across the board, but like I found a reasonable markup and just ate that. Because I do want this sort of just sorted out. I think if these virtual PC options were more reliable, again, I could have made this last for a while, right?
Right.
But they're just not. Like, I think if it were as good as having a PC, or even close, regularly to having a PC that's yours that you can talk to, that's one thing. But you know, a few days of this and I was like, it's just not ready. I can't use this as a stopgap to go weeks until like prices drop, which right. who even knows what the prices are going to do, because it's absurd right now, probably in part because Bitcoin is still worth a lot of money. I did also try a thing called Paperspace, which is like virtual machines for professionals, and MK's suspicion is this is what the Bitcoin mining is why I got this question. But when I clicked on, hey, give me the good PC, because you can just buy a PC to do your coding on, sure, whatever, and like test programming. But then they have like behind a little gate, there's like, you want ones with dedicated graphics card? You want these like networked GPUs? And I was like, do I? Yeah. And I click on it, and immediately you get a your account's not authorized for this. Wow. What do you want? What do you want this GPU for? What are you going to be doing? And I was like, I'm going to be playing sweet games, sir. And we'll see how that goes over. MK's suspicion is they will wave it through, because that's not Bitcoin mining. And that's probably right. The thing that they're worried about is people are going to be like, I'm just going to use these machines to mine Bitcoin, because it's worth more than the hourly rate that this service charges.
Definitely.
God. But yeah, so I'm currently in a very transitional state with regards to my PC life, my data storage. I've got everything up in drive. That's going to be great, but I do think long term, a NAS is right for me.
Are you going to we don't need to go further down this road. Good luck with, but I was going to ask you like for specific models and like, are you going to have it a big unit in the house somewhere? Like what's
going to be like? I'm a big unit. You do not need to worry about that. Big old Synology, just like parked somewhere unobtrusive, like the center of my room. You know, maybe
what are these bigger than a? Are they bigger than a PS5? Like, what's the size?
Oh, dude,
Bigger than a bread box.
Bread box,
but it's like a little mini server.
Yeah, I mean, it's not wild. Like, there's some smaller Synologies. Like, obviously, I won't do that. I'll require a larger one. Because there's two things. One is that I want one with, like, four drives, so I got that little extra layer of redundancy. And I can just sort of hot swap and not even worry about a drive failing. And two, long-term, like, I want to start securing my media library with all precious treasures. And that's going to be pretty...
For the future.
Storage hungry. Yeah.
You know, you don't know what legacy are you leaving behind for your kin?
Right. And, you know, I'll make sure everyone has the passwords to get into that stuff. And, you know, I am going in. I think when the time comes, I will also share my bounty with the world and be like, come join my Plex server. As soon as I learn how to use Plex, I will share my bounty with the people.
Plex is easy.
But that's great. I have two friends, Plex servers. It's a godsend.
It's great, yeah.
Patrick, I hope you like choral music.
You know what? You know, well, I got to widen my daughter's. She's 4 and a half. She needs to, you know, see things more than Finding Nemo. And I'm going to say, you know, she's not at school right now. I'm like, look, this is your hour of educational time. Rob has curated a list on this Plex server for you. Jessica,
hey, Jessica. Today we're going to learn about Stila Antico. Let me tell you about their approach to Renaissance choral music and how that's distinct from the 16s.
Rob, I need to curate the Criterion collection. You know, just pick a couple of crime thrillers for my daughter to work through.
How is she with subtitles?
I love the idea of a Rob Zachney like educational music series where Rob is narrating, before and then over music and explaining elements to a young audience. That's fantastic. Can't wait.
She's got to corrupt her before she goes to kindergarten and then just. Yeah.
Have her lecturing the rest of those kindergartners on what really yes. matters in this world, Rob.
Now, when you see Benjamin Britten's name, you can just skip that shit. Don't even worry about it. Do not at me about Benjamin. I do not want to hear it. Like, I've tried. I get it. Very important composer. Also, not a fan.
All right, we should take a break and come back and talk about video games, probably. BRB.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back. You know what I like about the new year is it's a good time to finish things.
Oh.
You know, you have like a couple things from the previous year, maybe, or even before
grudges.
That, you're like, grudges, end them. New year.
Passwords
new year,
you're new trying you. To figure it out.
Either end the grudge or end the reason for the grudge. You know what I mean?
Shit, like,
exactly. and so I set up upon myself this week to try to wrap some things up. Sometimes that's in anticipation of something to come. That was the case with Hitman 2. I finally went back. I beat the final two DLC levels of Hitman 2. You know, I'm like notoriously bad at going back and playing DLC. And so I never played this like really cool hit inside of a New York super bank. That they released, nor a cool level on like an island where people get their bodies it's like an island that has that machine from Elysium where people can just change what their physical appearances look like. The movie, the Matt Damon movie Elysium.
That's from the District favorite. 9 guy, right?
It is from the District 9 guy. I like
District 9 is great. Did he also make Chappie?
He also made Chappie. Chappie's great.
So he's got Chappie. Two real winners. How's Elysium?
It's all right. I like it, but it's not good. Like, you know.
But it maybe got dragged harder than it should have been.
I'd say in retrospect, yes. In retrospect to what action movies went on to look like, I would have rathered more Elysiums than more of what we got in the 2010s. You know what I mean? So Hitman was good. Again, disclosure, Janine Hawkins, who's from Friends of the Table, works on that game. But I really like going back to that. And wrapping that up and also kind of getting myself ready to go back into Hitman 3 because, like, I don't remember. Every time I try to play a Hitman game, I'm like, oh, shit, I don't remember how any of this works. And the moment that you realize that is the worst moment possible. It's when you're like, I have to turn this corner and throw this ashtray into that man's head. And instead you throw that corner, you realize you're now trespassing. And instead of throwing the ashtray, you drop it on the ground. And the guy turns around and goes, hey, you dropped that. Hey, you're not supposed to be in here. And then draws a gun and aims it at you. And you're like, well, this hit's going great.
You're supposed to be like channeling Agent 47, but instead you're just you.
It's yeah, just exactly.
Like 100%. If I were in the situation, like, oh no,
I'm like me channeling Charlie Chaplin. You know what I mean? I'm just like leaning all the way into bumbling idiot. So that was one of the things I wrapped up, and those levels are really cool. The bank level, I feel like I was unfair. We don't have to go over the specifics, but I think that the CEO's key that's supposed to get you to everything in the entire bank should have worked on the door to the vault. And when I learned it didn't, things went really
bad.
Haven't
you seen Die Hard?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. Fair.
You can't there's one. It's, you know, you can't, one person can't just open that vault.
I know, you're not wrong, but the key to that vault was like one room away in a closet. So it's not like they were doing real good, like InfoSec to begin with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the vault key was like above the mop and bucket.
It was in the security office looking at the vault. Like, what? That's not where you should keep that either. It shouldn't be within sight of the place to swipe that key. It needs to be further away than that. Anyway, that level was fun, and the island was really fun. And then yesterday, I got the bug again. I was like, you know, there's some stuff. I have some more unfinished business. You know, I guess it would have been – how long would have this been? Let me look up something really quick. When was this released? December 20th, 2011, a little game called Star Wars The Old Republic came out. The BioWare MMO the BioWare Austin studio that advanced the old Knights of the Old Republic storyline by like 300 years. You know, Revan and the Exile and all, everyone's favorite character, Mandalore and Candrus Ordo, everyone's favorite characters, mm-hmm. their legacies, Bastila Shan, you know, all that stuff. I was like, I guess I should give some backstory, which is actually along with Janine Hawkins and also Art from Friends of the Table, in 2011, 2012, we went hard into Old Republic. We played everything there was at launch, except for the final planet of that game, the final area, and the finale, the big conclusion. We literally at the time got to Corellia, where the final stuff is, went like, oh, we should go look at what this planet looks like before we wrap up tonight, ran to like where the main like quest hub was at the very beginning of that world, and then stopped playing the game forever. Never went back 4 hours from the conclusion of that, of each of our class
story. Was it just because you were savoring it? Were you like, we don't want this journey to end?
I need to remember the specifics. On one end, I think we were probably getting done with it. I think for me, the most fun I had with that game was during the kind of group activities where you could kind of like each make different decisions or try to push the party in different directions, and almost felt like a tabletop role-playing game, and that was really fun. Or the class stuff. Like, the thing that made Old Republic really cool and different than something like WoW, which it plays a lot like in some ways, or in many ways, is that when you did your class story, it was like playing a BioWare game. You have companions who approve or disapprove of what you do. You are making choices about like, hey, do you want to go, you know, stop the Sith secret police, or do you want to go save the hostages? What, which choice are you making? And what does that mean about the Jedi that you are, if you're playing as a Jedi Knight, for instance? And so I liked that stuff, but at the time, I think we were just kind of tired of it. Also, maybe my computer did a Rob and completely fell apart, like Rob's computer just did.
Well, hold on. But yeah, let's not say it's like doing a Rob. Rob,
right?
Like a Rob's PC.
A Rob's PC. That, yeah, sorry. Sorry, sorry. anyway, I think that it was around that time also that maybe my PC fell apart, or, you know what, I was playing it on a laptop actually. So maybe my laptop just wasn't there anymore. I have a way of telling when this happened, but it doesn't matter. The key of it, so no, I think we just stopped playing. I think we just like hit that thing. Maybe we took like a break because I had to go home for, you know, a holiday or something, and then like the it's one of those things, right, where like the spell is broken.
I got to the end of Sekiro, final boss, and said, I'm good. Never
right.
did it.
Totally, that happens, right? And so this was literally, you know, for people who don't know, the way that this game works is like you go to a planet, you have your main class story on the planet, and then you have whatever like side stuff you want to do on that planet. We hit level cap. So at the time, we literally, all we had to do was the main class story for each of our classes, then go do the big finale, and then we were done. And so now, 8 years later, 9 years later, last night, some friends of mine are getting into Old Republic. I was like, I'll make a new character and fuck around for a little bit. Why not? And I did that. And then I hit a point where I was like, no, I can't fuck around in the Old Republic. I got work to do. I'm going to end this shit. I'm going after the Emperor. I'm going to kill that motherfucker. It's going to be over. And so I loaded into my Jedi Knight character. I remembered, I like looked up what the contemporary version of my rotation is, which is much simpler, I think, than it was in 1.0. I remember at 1.0, I had to like keep 15 abilities like in my mind at one time. And now I'm just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Very simple, easy.
What are you playing?
Like Jedi Knight, the kind of dot DPS version of it, single saber. You know, very like traditional looking Jedi. Except I was playing him extremely dark-sided, which is extremely fun because the way that game works is you have your faction, but you can also have your light or dark side, right? And so the dark side Jedi is like very much interested in like getting the job done no matter what, saving the Republic, not necessarily helping people. I mean, I guess case in point to this is when you beat the game in beta, when this game was in beta, if you beat the game as a dark side Jedi for the Republic, instead of getting the Jedi Master title added to your account, you got the general title added to your account. And that still happens fictionally. You like get your big and you get your big like final conversation with your Jedi Master Satil Shan, and she is like, you did a great job out there, but I can sense the dark side. It's hanging over you in a serious way. I wish I could welcome you as a Jedi Master, but until
what Fallout 1 bullshit is this?
100%. Like, but until you reconnect with the Force, we can't go forward on that. And your character can just be like, I've done more for this Republic than the rest of the Jedi ever can. And I absolutely said that. And another, like, you know, a nearby admiral or whatever, the high commander of the Republic's army was like, this is BS. This Jedi clearly helped us win this war. You should be rewarded with something. I'm giving you the honorary title of High General or whatever it was. But apparently in the beta, enough people cried about that or mad about that, that they undid that change and you don't get the general title anymore. Everybody gets the Jedi Master title, even if you didn't fucking earn it. Even if literally your master is like, you don't get to be a Jedi Master. You're clearly consumed by the dark side. Look at your face. The veins are like coming. And I could do...
The vascularity. Exactly.
I could do a map where I could feel how deep your skin has recessed. You're evil. You're Star Wars evil now, Austin. But no, I still get the Jedi Master title now. Anyway, I did it. I went through. I beat that final planet. I did all the class stuff and then confronted the Emperor. There was like some fun beats there. I wish I would have done it 8-9 years ago when I wasn't like completely bored by this kind of MMO encounter design style. This game does not hold up in that way. Maybe the later content has gotten more interesting, but let me tell you, that launch content is a drag. It's a lot of like, go to this place and turn off the engine. Now do it two more times in two more places that are basically identical, and like go from enemy pod to enemy pod doing the same thing. Where like, as long as your rotation is down, you're gonna have no problem getting through it. I guess to their credit or maybe just to walk that back a little bit, I was a little over leveled because most of that content was like levels 47 to 50 and I was 50 at the start and 52 by the end of it. So like, I can cut them some slack a little bit, but not really. Like the basic design is just not there, but it was really nice to go back and put a wrapper on that and like close that book. Like that was an open book forever. It was like, what's that fight like? I have no idea what that final fight is going to be like. I know I'm supposed to like go fight the Emperor or whatever. And getting to close that door and like re-inhabit that character for like 4 hours yesterday was really fun. So, you know.
Is that game basically on ice? Like it's,
you know, I think the like, last,
does the saga continue?
I think the last big expansion was 2019 one apparently, but it was the last.
I have definitely gotten emails about that game. It's still all right. It's, you know, EverQuest just got a new expansion.
Yeah,
like MMOs just get expansions still.
Anthem's gonna be good any day now.
I mean, this is the thing: is that like I actually felt.
I'm curious.
I actually was playing Old Republic, and I was like, just got more right than Anthem did in some ways because I care about these characters and like get to make some interesting choices.
Yeah,
and,
but then earlier you said, looked up how I press 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Totally.
Rhythm and like that. Yes. Great. That's why absolutely. I don't play MMOs.
No, like that's the combat. And again, I was playing a very boring, very straightforward class. Was over leveled. So, but yeah, I guess there was an expansion in 2019, though I don't really know how that works, because the stuff that I last read about in the Old Republic, which was Knights of the Fallen Empire and Knights of Eternal Throne, like took place in the future of the Old Republic. Like you get frozen in carbonite, and when you wake up, there's a new empire that exists and has like taken over the galaxy.
Sorry, like pre Battle of Yavin, still
very pre.
So it's like, Battle whoops, there's another empire.
It's very clear at the end of the night, the Jedi Knight ending, and I think also the Sith Warrior story, the launch story from again 9 years ago, that the Emperor of the Sith Empire is not simply a human, but is someone who can kind of take over multiple bodies and forms. So my suspicion is that this is like, and then he fucked off and built another empire. You knocked him out in such a way that he couldn't like connect to the Sith anymore or whatever, and the Sith fell into disarray, but then he went off and founded a different empire or something. That's my guess. I've not played this stuff, but if I had to based on the stuff I've played and seen, that is my read. But yeah, I think that it's, again, the premise of that shit is that you, early on in that story, you get knocked out, frozen in carbonite, and then you wake up. I thought it was like hundreds of years later, but maybe that's not exactly right.
I hate how much that premise does for me. I'm always really like, oh wait, you just wake up and it's like a new scenario, and like I'm like, hell yes, give me that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I'm with you.
You wake up, there's a lightsaber on the table, and it's just like, we've been waiting. Okay, cool.
We've been waiting for you, yeah.
Let me Gordon Freeman this.
I mean, the premise of the new shit that it's like, this is the thing. It's like, I'm going to fucking work myself into a shoot and end up playing this, or at least watching a video about what happens in it. The Eternal Empire of Zakuul, which is the focus of the two of these expansions, is a totalitarian dictatorship under the Immortal Emperor. Citizens don't merely obey the Emperor, they view him as their timeless guide and protector. By trusting him with all political and military power, they can focus on higher learning and the finer aspects of civilized society. All citizens receive a monthly stipend of credits and resources such as food and fuel. Compared to the rest of the galaxy, the average Zakuulan would be a member of the upper class and want for nothing. They are idealistic people, scientists, artists, and philosophers who look down on the Sith Empire and the Republic, disgusted by their warmongering ways. Instilled with the Valkorian's arrogance, they believe it is their burden to bring enlightenment to the rest of the galaxy. Mm. I kind of want to play that game. I want to see that empire.
Sounds all right.
I want to live there. That sounds okay. I hear that they're a totalitarian dictatorship, but that bit about everyone getting money and resources and not having to pay rent sounds okay. What happened there? How's that work out?
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably bad, but I'm curious about it.
Yeah, but we'll be convincing, we'll be satisfyingly bad, where it's like, right. No, it's bad that all your needs are met and you can define yourself however you like and lead the life you've dreamed of. Because, yeah, like, I'm curious how they arrive at that, right? Like,
yeah.
Is it the entire thing is built on bones? Okay, right, cool. Right, then, like, right, then we can talk. Right. But if it's just, oh, no, like, he doesn't let you have parliamentary democracy.
Right.
So yes. Are you really free?
Right. That is
really
the question.
Have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my Old Republic weird diversion. That's what I got up to this week. Yesterday specifically.
How different was that game's mechanics from the Coder series?
Much. It's a while.
Hey, what if, like, we all got into Guild Wars?
I'm not going to do it again. I've done it. I've been deep into Guild Wars.
The first one?
No, I guess the second one. Not the first.
The first one I've heard is like,
I'm not getting into the Guild Wars. Guild Wars is from actually, what, 2003?
Between actually keeping up with Destiny and trying to inch my way towards catching up with Final Fantasy 14, I don't have time in my life for another MMO.
God. No, me either. But yeah, the Knights of the Old Republic games are just like D20. It's like playing D&D. Like, you have stat scores that are about like your ability to open doors and convince people of things. You know what I mean? Whereas Old Republic is just a WoW, basically.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah, so it goes. Anyone else dip into anything? Patrick, are you still in that 13 Sentinels?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I'm going to have to play other games because, like, there's not, like, a 13 Sentinels update. Like, because right. It would just be, like,
you giving the premise again.
When, yeah, like, now it's, like, just, you know, it's a lot of, I start a new sequence and then, you know, I mean, I guess what I will say is I would be so curious about the writing process for this game because the presentation of 13 Sentinels is sequences out of sequence. Like, it is clear that, like, the story, it feels like the story was written in a linear fashion and then is presented to the player non-linearly. Now, again, I don't know how, you know, what the explanations would be for, like, how certain things may, you know, but, like, it's fun. Like, the storytelling itself is a puzzle piece because you're not seeing things necessarily in order. At least that's the how it's suggested to the player, that you are watching things in a sequence that is not necessarily from normal start to finish. But yeah, I don't know. We're just, like, I gotta play other games because maybe if you keep playing it, we can do a spoiler cast or something like that at the end of it. Because it's not like a game I can be like, so what happened? Well, I can't talk about anything that happened because everything that I would say is like a potential spoiler for now that I'm like, you know, 11 hours in. I will say I finished. So when you get past the prologue, then you get to like this carousel of characters that we talked about where you can like do different routes for the like, I don't know, like 15 or like 12 or whatever. It's a decent mm-hmm. number of characters that you can pick from. And as you encounter new characters in other characters' routes, that will open up them as a character you can specifically follow. I did everything like in the trees. And so then it was like, all right, I guess time to do the combat. And I mean, it is. When they mean casual, like they're not lying. Which is fine. It's exactly what I wanted. It is just like I jump into the combat. The upgrades don't matter. The what you have kitted out your characters with, irrelevant. Where they are in the map does not matter. You just jump in. You smash that A button for about 90 seconds and S rank. Here's your mystery points so you can unlock the lore. And specifically, there are lore bits that are unlocked if you only meet the bonus objectives, like beat it in a minute or do so with certain characters. And I just want that's the shit I want. I don't want to like lose a fight and have to either do it again or not get that little piece of story or look that up on a wiki. Like, so I'm complete, you know, so I spent like an hour grinding through the there's nothing I can do. I have to get through these combat sequences because the way the game gates further like of the visual novel part of it is like beat this wave in order to like unlock this keyword that lets you then go down this path. So that's where I'm at, and we can revisit it later. The one thing that would be relevant for this podcast is I lambasted a bunch of like remote play for like a lack of like customization options, and I still wish it had more, but there are a little bit more than I was aware of at the time. I just if like as you're launching remote play on the, so like there's not that many options on the PS5 itself, which is I thought where most of your like customization would come from. Is like, oh, you're on the machine, you're going to choose what it's going to spit out to the devices that make a connection with it. And it turns out on the app itself, you have a couple more options. So like I was able to bump it up to like 1080p. It was like defaults to 540p, which on a screen of an iPhone isn't that big of a difference. Once I hardwired my PS5 and set it to 1080p, and then also you can turn on HDR. Like it'll do that through remote play. And like this game has really beautiful lighting with its like its painterly 2D artwork, to the point where I think HDR is neat, but I can kind of like take it or leave it in a lot of instances. But then I'll play a game like Ghost of Tsushima where it's like, ah shit, actually HDR is incredible. And that's like a fully, 3D open world. And then like the other game that I would tell you, like, you want to like know why HDR is like pretty dope, is like this 2D visual novel, 13 Sentinels. Like the sequences where you're like outside at the school, like it is like the best way I can convey HDR to folks that haven't really experienced it is like when you like go out into the sun and your eyes squint a little, like HDR like is able to fake that sometimes. Yeah. Like I can feel my eye like having the physical reaction that I'm seeing the sun, and it's doing this in a 2D visual novel on my phone that's a, like, you know, a foot from my face. It looks so like, now that I've got the connection styled, like 1080p HDR on an iPhone 12, like it looks so fucking good. It would look even better on a big screen, but it looks gorgeous on this little bit. So if you're using remote play or I know some folks reached out and said they bought a Backbone after I had recommended it, like make sure you go into like the settings on the phone app, and if you have the connection, or if you're like, you know, like a lot of people are maybe just remote playing from their PlayStation 4 or 5 that's sitting next to them in the room, they just want to do it on the couch, just make sure you bump that up, because it does make a meaningful difference. And the HDR stuff, if you're I think most phones these days have HDR, but if it does, flip it on, because it's really pretty. Now it's got me thinking like, okay, I think I'm gonna try and finish Demon Souls this way. I'm like, I'm gonna go fight King Alant. This is the method. God. I'm gonna do to finally like finish the last hour and a half of
that. Would
I haven't finished
funny.
That game because I don't want to fight the blue dragon. Like that part is just so boring. Like, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna go get out some arrows and I'm gonna shoot that blue dragon. It's like,
you don't need to fight that dragon. Wait, which dragon? The dragon in front of the.
Yeah, like you don't have you. Yeah, yes, you can run through that final section. But like, I remember when I played it originally, I beat the. Did you not do it? Did you just run
Fuck
through
that.
It?
Just okay. run through that. Right, what am I? Because it's the end of the game, right? Like,
yeah.
the way I feel about that is like, if that was early game, I was like, I can get something cool from killing this dragon, then maybe. But it's literally right. one of the last things I do. You do, right? So fuck that. Just run
maybe
through
Maybe I'll commit to beating Demon Souls on this remote play app on my couch. And
that'd be very funny.
I'll report
that'd be
back.
Very funny. Yeah. That fight's hard. So I, you know, Godspeed.
Just imagine if Bard had said, I don't want to fight that dragon. I don't want to shoot that dragon. Fuck God. That.
Okay. Great.
Oh, the only other thing I played was, well, let me ask, Kato, will this go out at 10 a.m. Eastern
yeah.
Standard Time?
Yeah,
Friday?
We can do that. Okay. That's not.
I have nothing meaningful to say about it, except that I like no one redeemed the Persona 5 Strikers code that I got. So I was like, all right, I'll check this out on Switch and check it out. So, that you know, Persona 5 Strikers is, you know, Persona's take on the, fuck it, I'm forgetting the term.
Labor movement?
Yeah.
No, the Age of Calamity.
Muso Warriors.
Muso game. Yeah, Warrior style game. And I was like, I really love the style of Persona 5, you know, and like maybe that will just be something fun to goof around on the couch. And that may be the case, except that like it appears this is like, you know, a story that takes place after Persona 5, and like there's a lot of like going around the city and talking to people and like visiting with characters that you would have emotional attachments to if you'd played Persona 5. And I got to like a sequence, like I played like the intro tutorial of the comment. I was like, oh, this seems kind of neat. It's very pretty. Yeah. And then it was like clear that it was like what's in front of me was like 2 hours of like catching up with characters. And I was like, well, I hope nobody else wants this code because it's stuck on my Switch now. Because I played 20 hours of Persona 5, like really liked it, and then just it was like I don't have another 60 in me to see it to the end. Mm. But yeah, it's that game seems pretty. I couldn't even say that without disclosing figuring out the embargo. But so yeah, that game seems pretty if you're into Persona. But I never finished Persona 5, so. A man can dream.
That is why I'm not touching that game. Is like it, I feel like it would. The premise of it is that it's post Persona 5, right? Like so, like what am I going to do? I don't know.
I was sitting there like skipping the dialogue, fast forwarding. I was like, what am I doing? Like this. Like I knew within 30 seconds that like, oh no, like I shouldn't have put this on my Switch. But you know, but it looks really like it's you know it's on PC and. PS4. I don't know if it's on PS5 as well, but my guess is it looks fucking like it looks really nice on Switch, and my guess it looks even better on those other machines.
Yeah, it looks great from everything I've seen. Yeah,
put Persona 5 on Switch. Like I don't know if I'd finish it, but I'd probably go back to it and try it again. Or I guess put Persona 4 on Switch is really what I
you never beat 4, right?
No,
never...
I played like 15 hours of it on Vita and then fell off it. If Rob can't beat Persona 4, then I'm not going to sit and kick
who can, honestly. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Kato, remember, I'm bad at things, and I refuse to do
my
research.
That's not what I that's not what I meant. Kato, did you play anything this week? You want to say anything?
Just more Exapunks, really. That game is good, but also it's weird how I took like a computer science class, like one computer science class in high school. And was like,
I was hoping that you took one after starting Exapunks. I was like, I don't understand how to do programming, so I need to sign up for computer science class.
No, like I took one in high school, and like I always kind of tinkered with it randomly. And like actually, honestly, like my grad school like thesis project, I ended up coding in 3 different languages, like bits and pieces that are like obviously very like. I showed it to a coder friend. They're like, this is a fucking mess. What are you doing? Like, I'm not good at it even. But it's like weird how what ostensibly is work is really fun sometimes. The way they tweak the idea of coding language here to make it simple enough that it's more like the puzzle and what's the word I'm looking for? Just problem solving aspects of coding and not the frustrating like, this syntax doesn't make any fucking like sense, and the only reason I know that this word is supposed to go here is because I looked up like and dug through a document that's like 100 pages long or some shit, right?
Listen, man, removed from exploitative and alienating, you know, social relations, labor can be pleasurable,
right?
It turns out. Maybe we should do something about that.
Which is funny because in the game, you're fucking, it's work, right? It's work. Like, you're literally playing a person who's doing work in order to make money, in order to survive. Like, they need medication that they cannot afford otherwise. Which is, I think I keep forgetting about that game because the, like, kind of story interludes come pretty quickly. Technically, it's like every 2 or 3 levels or something else. But those levels take so long sometimes because I'm like going back and forth between the like instruction PDF and the game and like figuring things out. And I'm like, oh, right, there's a narrative here. And I'm going to have to actually, I think I'm just going to go back and watch all of the cutscenes individually once I'm like through it. Just kind of string it all together. But still, that game is... it struck me how much I stopped at a certain point. I was like, this is like someone's job somewhere. But I don't think I could do this as a job, honestly, even though I'm having fun with this game.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm mad at myself for having dropped off of that. It was one of those things that felt like if I commit to this, my brain will grow. I will be more fulfilled as a human being. I will because it's hard. It's like it's sort of thinking I don't do very often anymore. That style of programming stuff. And the everything about the rapper that all those that game takes place in is like extremely my shit. It just was one of those things where I was like, I'm not going to find the time to dedicate to myself to learning how any of this works beyond, you know, the first 6 or 7 levels that, you know, by the end of that, I was like, damn, this is getting hard.
I hit one where I had to like double check how math works because it was about like, I had to split a number evenly and then also get its remainder, but without an advanced calculator, like the game's internal math only spits back up full integers. And I was like, shit, right. How did I get that remainder without, I had to like Google math for a second. It's like, I'm sure I learned this at some point in fucking elementary school. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, as soon as the iPhone was invented, my brain said, cool, math doesn't exist anymore. Of course, now I have a child and like, there are like a lot, you know, people are like, oh, you have 2 girls. Like, you're worried about like teenage life. And I was like, no, you know, the thing I worry about most having children is knowing that like they've retaught, how, you know, like changed how they teach math. Yeah. And everything I heard from parents in my generation is like, your brain is just not gonna, like, it's just so fundamentally different than how it was taught to us in school that you as the adult have to relearn basic like addition, subtraction, because it's just a totally different philosophy. That's what I worry about. Is like, I thought I finally said, cool, technology solved math for me. Like, I'm not good at it. I was never good at it. Moving out of my life. And instead I'm gonna have to like try and teach a small child it. And oh God, that's gonna be my exopunk, is like teaching basic math to a 5-year-old.
Yeah. You know what's a foundation that never goes out of fashion? Is Euclid.
Wow. Okay.
Thanks. Can't go wrong. Just start studying up, Patrick. I can recommend some translations.
I also
I can't. That would be I didn't read Euclid. I couldn't understand that shit.
Also, that's just also all reminded me that like I had to look up. Like, sometimes if you're playing a puzzle game, you can like obviously you can always look up the like solution or try to find hints. But what I had to look up here was like a structure of something, because the way the game works out is that you don't just have to make your little, like, basically it's abstracted by these little like robots that are moving around computer systems that you're programming. You don't have to make those little robots do a thing once. You have to do it in 100 different permutations. So like, it has the program that you write has to account for the fact that files might be in different locations on these different permutations. Like, it's not always gonna, like, there's no, you have to like account for not knowing what this computer system that you're hacking into actually looks like, which is just a neat way of doing a puzzle that is like, there isn't one solution. Like, they also include like histograms of like, this is how everyone else's codes compare to yours with like length and like how many actions they take and things like that, which is always neat to see. I'm always like on the like higher end of everything. It's like, wow, somebody wrote a code here that was like half the size of mine. That's fascinating. Because it definitely feels like in the moment I'm like getting to like, yeah, this is as efficient as this can be, and it's never right.
No, I always like 12 steps more than whatever the best person did.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, that's fun. I'm really enjoying getting through that. Hopefully I hear it gets even harder than, so I don't know what the future looks like, but I'm trying to power
through. Kato's going to transcend and also become an elite hacker. What? It's going to happen. Oh, Kato's going to be able to get into that dude's Bitcoin safe and recover. Okay, we got to get money together to buy that Bitcoin safe.
Give it to me. Let's go. I'm ready. I got my Netrunner box over here. I'm like channeling everything cyberpunk and hacking right now. It's all great.
Also, in a year, my kids in kindergarten, you can teach them math, Kato, as well.
Great, sure. I'm also, yeah.
All of our solutions lie in Kato's hands. Before we wrap up, Rob, there's one more thing I know you played. Nodding. Yeah.
Y'all heard of Slay the Spire?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, no. Let me tell you about Homestuck.
Enlighten me. A roguelike deck builder seems unique.
Damn.
Oh. Well, now I don't want to share my experience.
I only saw the beginning of your tweet thread about this, but no. I did not see the conclusion.
Oh, I didn't see the thread at all. Damn.
Okay, so.
Been too busy. Missing quick tweet thing. Threads.
So I got a bunch of purchase notifications on my Xbox account that weren't me. It turns out I gave my old Xbox to my dad. He logged in as me. There were some mistakes. I had to call him and talk.
What do you buy? What do you buy?
Can we talk about it? There's an embarrassment.
Let's go.
Racing games. Bears?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see a through line here.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. Like, extremely Rob's dad type games.
We don't need to worry about returning any of those things. It's fine. Yeah. We can keep those.
Add some family sharing, and, you know, it's okay, Dad. Yeah, I got this.
Yeah. So I basically had to be like, hey, you're signed in as the wrong guy. You're not the wizard. I'm the wizard. You're the catcher's mitt. That's you. So that he understood that. But while I was in there, he was like, so wait, so the games I bought you have, but I don't have them. And I was like, yeah, that's correct. But I can just, I can just give you the money and you buy the stuff. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. Cause you know, it can be a bit like, he was just like, I don't want you to have to go to that trouble. I was like, it's no trouble, but you can't convince your parents. It's no trouble unless it is trouble, at which point they won't take no for an answer. That's mm-hmm. just how life is. But I was like, hey, you could try out Game Pass. Let me show what would my dad like on Game Pass? Because mm-hmm. he's still mastering the whole thumbsticks thing, which is a tough skill to pick up when you're in your 60s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also the Xbox interface is totally foreign to him. You do not understand how little intuitive sense any of these interfaces make mm-hmm. if you're just coming from, I use a laptop, I use Windows. Xbox completely, all the sign and stuff, really confusing. But anyway, I'm trying to figure out what stuff that he's going to play. And so I'm leafing through Game Pass and I'm like, hey, Slay the Spire seems like he'd dig that. I get off the call with him and I'm like, maybe I'd dig that. Because I'm still in that strategy mode. And even on consoles, the strategy offerings are not amazing. I could have fired up a Paradox game, but I just don't feel like doing that. I'd rather play that.
That's a big ask. If you're like, I'm going to settle in for some console Stellaris, that's settling in for three nights is set in a single night of gameplay.
But Slay the Spire is just what I needed. It was.
Hell yeah.
It was like slipping into a perfectly drawn bath where it's just like, oh, this is so comfortable and welcoming. I could just stay in here forever.
This is your first time playing this game, right?
Not since the save point we did.
Yeah, save point.
Where we were sort of figuring out turns, but I was just sort of playing it the other night. And I had a little bit of struggle with the first character who looks a lot like Griffith
Ironclad
from but then I got the Silent, which is kind of the poisoner lady, mm-hmm. and holy shit, it was extremely satisfying.
Yeah,
because every time I got options to be like, okay, so what should I do here? I'd already run into the problem where as the knight, I just had a deck that was too big. And I had no control over what was coming up. And so I would just be like completely unable to mount an offense when I wanted to or defense when I needed to. But this character, there were so many cards that was like draw two, discard one, draw one, here, get extra power and draw two. And so there were just tons of things I could get. Plus I got a bunch of artifacts and some cards that allowed a selection of innate cards that would just start in my hand.
Yep.
And so I had these ridiculous combos in this game where I was like just slaughtering people right and left. And it was amazing. It's just like every turn was like the perfect turn in some ways where I was like just devastation. And I was like, truly, I've crafted the perfect deck. I'm a genius at Slay the Spire. I'm not. I tried the little robot dude the next run, and the little robot dude required some planning that I did not do effectively.
Yeah,
like I didn't understand the orbs for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, they seem important, but I don't.
They're cool. There's the artifact. Is that right, Kato? Do you remember?
The defect.
Defect.
The defect. That's what it was. Right. The defect. Right. I've had a couple of good defect runs over the years now, I guess, actually, which is wild to think about. but yeah, I think I always come back to the Silent as my favorite. The Silent is who, like, made me love that game. And you know, she's simpler than the defect is, and also the new fourth character who I've barely put any time into, who's like a martial arts monk type.
Did that ever come to the Switch version?
It must have, right? If it didn't, that would be such a long time, right?
When did that even come out? I never got to play that extra class at the end.
Last January.
Damn, is when it been released. A year. Shit.
It was in beta last September. Not this past September, the September before that. Right. So it's been a while since the Watcher, that's that fourth class, came out. So plenty of time for that.
I think I came very close, though, to destroying my run as the Silent in the last boss battle. And I was actually saved because I'd gotten a Void card that cost me one energy, one action. Mm-hmm. Because I had an artifact on me that I could pop that filled my hand with Shiv cards or Infinite Blade cards.
Right, which give you Shivs, which are like zero right. costs.
And the Infinite damage. Blade is a cool little graphic. Like it's somebody like a hawker in like a subway station with their coat open. And it's all knives. Like, yes. Just, hey buddy, you want a throwing dagger?
Boy, and do so, I.
I also had a card called Nightmare that triples one of these cards, any card in your hand, and you'll get three of them next turn. And so I did not have enough energy to do Nightmare and use all my infinite blades. And so they kind of just got shuffled into my deck. But I did use it on one of them. And then I had three infinite blades the next turn around, and I used all of them. And what I hadn't anticipated was that, yes, I would get an endless supply of free attacks that were doing pretty decent damage. Like every turn now would open with like six free attacks that cost no energy, and then I could do whatever. The problem is, I think if I'd had full energy that first turn, I think I might have created a situation where I maxed out my hand limit on free blades. I'm not sure, I'd have to do the math, but I think there was a possibility that I could have ended up in a situation where I had no other cards in my hand except Shivs at the start of every turn. And then I couldn't have done anything because they don't let you draw anything.
What is the
but
max?
As it was, you got a 10 card limit.
Really? I don't think I had ever realized that. I've never hit that limit.
The way I was playing it, I found that limit real fast with the Silent. Because my entire game plan was just like move cards through. But as it worked out, it was like instead it was like six Shivs at the start of every turn and then four cards that were pretty awesome. And I could usually use those to spin more actions out of it. And so it just felt great. I utterly adore this game, and I think it's really priming me for more card battle, card driven roguelike adventures in the near future. I think
I'm actually really curious what you would think of Monster Train, a game that I kind of bounced off of for aesthetic reasons, but has a little bit more going on in terms of like positioning, and like it's sort of tower defense-y in some ways, but I think you might click with it a little bit more than I did.
Yeah, some of the 3MA gang are talking about that game, and I'll give it a shot because like right now my heart is very open. So I think I'm ready to board the Monster Train. But here's the other problem: Slay the Spire is so good,
it's so good
that there is kind of an element of like, oh, right now I'm just, this is perfection. Like
I know, right? I can trust this thing is in front of me, and it just tastes so good.
And even when it goes bad, it's kind of fun where it's like, oh, I see now why this is going bad. This attack is spiraling in some really cool ways. Yeah. It's fun.
Would you believe that the people who made Slay the Spire were very big Netrunner fans?
I had good heard company. That.
Yeah, that's true. They were very big in the Netrunner scene.
Well, I think so. This is the thing I also really dig, is that because Slay the Spire is kind of just doesn't have to be competitively balanced, right? Like,
correct.
you can have a game where it's just like, hey, just create endless combos and chains and just fuck up that computer. That's awesome. That's great. You would never be allowed to do that. Like, if you did this stuff in a competitive game, this is the sort of stuff where it's like, we need to house rule this and we need to
or we're never write playing a designer. Again. I'm never playing this game with you. Yeah. Exactly. We need to write a complaint to say that this should be banned from tournament play or something. Yes.
Yeah. Whereas here, it's just like, go off. You know, sure. Let's
break it however you like. Yeah, totally. Well, I'm glad you've joined us in the Slay the Spire fan club. It's warm and good here. anyone else want to shout anything out before we wrap up? I think I'm good. I'm spent. We got through this week. This is a long week. You could hear it in my voice that my voice is dying. So we can't talk about what it was I was talking about all week, but one day you'll find out theoretically. Mm-hmm. So look forward to that. Hopefully soon. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you all for joining us. We'll be back. Remember, no episode next Monday, but we'll be back for the Friday episode, which, wow, the timing on that will be post-inauguration. Uh-huh.
I was looking at the calendar.
Let's go. Buckle up.
Well, shit. The
final
21st,
Trump-era podcast.
Well, I don't know about Trump and the White House. I think the Trump era will live with us.
We'll continue.
Far beyond.
Yeah, unfortunately. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Kato?
Why did my brain went to like the post Marvel movies, like Iron Man will continue.
Donald Trump will continue.
Will continue. Fuck.
Yeah. They don't fucking convict that dude. He's running. God. So
I'm at @A_Kato_appears.
Rob.
@RobZachney.
Patrick.
@PatrickKlepek.
Well, everything we do, twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.vice.com. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. waypoint.zone/BOEN. As always, and forever, honestly, I said already in this episode, fuck capitalism. Go home. Stay safe, everybody. Peace.
Okay, real quick, Austin. How are you feeling about the Doug Peterson situation?
Oh, fuck. I hit stop immediately like a fucking fool. I'm sorry.
I completely
forgot. You could do it. You could just do it through your backup, right?
Yeah. I got this.
It is what it is. Do you know what I mean?
Do you
want
to see Carson back, or are you just kind of like, let's nuke it and start over?
I'm a nuke it and start over, trust the process. The Carson Wentz era is dead for me.
Like, send him here.
Yeah, you can have him. Let's do it. Go for it. What do you got? Give me something.
You want six first round picks? I feel like that's what our shit ass mortgage the future GM is going to do. Always good to have a front office that won't tell you how much longer their GM and coach are on their contracts, because it would probably reveal that they quietly extended them without announcing it. Because had they announced it,
wait, is that the theory?
Yeah, there's a theory that they tied them through at the end of 2022 and don't want to say it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. So Austin, I've never seen.
No, I'm ready to like, I'm ready to move on, which means probably having a couple of seasons where we're just like not in the hunt in a real way. But
the next season, seeing like what you actually have in Jalen Hurts, if you win six games in like an exciting fashion, you're like, cool, like, all right, like we can do something with this. Or
but it's clear that the institution of the Eagles is not ready to make that decision. And that is what scares me, is that like every year we don't start Hurts and get him like ready to go. That it's just gonna be rough, man.
I get it,
they invested in Wentz, but like they shouldn't have.
Yeah, I mean, there was a minute where that looked like the most an extremely can't miss investment, but then really quickly it looked very iffy. It's been an odd arc with that guy. I feel like you've had a run of super like high ceiling in theory situations in Philly that always end up in this place of like, what do we got?
That has been the situation.
And you won your Super Bowl, the backup, and then that guy went on to fucking curse us.
Yeah, well, sorry.
So, this is like, Patrick, I'm real upset about this Bears situation because one, it told me that the president of the Bears, Ted Phillips, has been there for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Mike McCaskey, who was like the last McCaskey to really be in there and just fucking with shit with the Bears. There were like a few bad years in the 90s and people were like, we got to get this guy out of here. We need to bring in an outside pro. And the first guy they brought in, they basically married. And since then, I'm like, when I think about the last 20 years of Bears football, it's been bad.
Can I read this quote? Like Ted Phillips, the CEO, like the head of football operations for the Bears. He said, have we gotten the quarterback situation completely right? No. Have we won enough games? No. But everything else is there. The two things you're supposed to do, you haven't done. Don't worry. Like, we just add a tackle. Man, this team's gonna be humming.
Well, and the thing is, like, yesterday's press conference was such a bummer, Austin, because like it's one of those things where you realize these decisions, these like top level like corporate decisions, these are like trajectory for the next 10 years type decisions that they're making now.
And whoever
they punted.
Yes, totally. Well, for me, it's like losing a head coach is in many ways much worse than losing a quarterback. Like, listen, Wentz had a few good years, but that just happens with quarterbacks sometimes. Sometimes you bring in a quarterback, you know, and coming off of their college, you know, performances, they're like, oh, wow, yeah, we got a couple good years off of them. With Wentz, we got like three or four really, really solid years. And then like this was a disaster year and it's OK for us to think about moving on. But shifting head coach means shifting so much about like the shape of the team and the way we play that it's scary to me.
Our teams are in like not great. So it's like, even if like your team's tearing it down, I wish our team was tearing it down. Yeah. But it's also like who the fuck would want to come here? Like in either situation, it's totally. Do you need cap space? Don't got it. Do you need draft picks? Mixed bag. Like confusing QB situation. Absolutely. Like come here to the Bears or Eagles. The org?
No, don't, you won't get it. You'll be replaceable too. I mean, this is my secret hope is, wow, Peterson just didn't click with Wentz. But we know that that's not how this shit works because there are so many other people involved with the production of an offense that it's not just Doug Peterson, right?
It's really good that he like took like 1,000 arrows trying to tank their final game of the season by putting in Nate Sudfeld, which was most likely a decision made in concert with ownership,
trying
to ensure, I guess, you know, it jumps them from like 10th in the draft to like 5th in the draft. That's like really meaningful in terms of the players. But then he gets fired after being completely shit on appropriately for that strategic decision.
But it's a good decision. I don't go fuck.
Of course.
But right, he took those arrows. Right, he took those slings and arrows, and in response to all this shit, he gets booted. I don't know. Listen, Peterson was a good coach for us, and I'll never forget you, Doug. Shout outs to Doug.
Thanks, Doug. Maybe someday I'll be feeling that way about Matt Nagy.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No. I don't think so.
There's a pretty big difference. There's something happened with us that, you know, didn't happen with y'all. So
it's a bad place to be as a Bears fan, where the 12-4 season, which is probably the most joy I've had watching that team in my adult life, actually turned out to be a curse because it convinced them that they were better than they were. And now I'm going to spend, like, as Rob put it, like, until my child is in middle school, living with the consequences of, like, one season where we beat the Packers. We lost the first outing in tragic fashion and managed to beat the shit out of them once. And it's like, we beat the Packers once. Time to turn these coaches and this infrastructure into lifers.
God, I should go back and watch that Super Bowl we won. That was fun. It was a good game. Like, that's the thing, is it was just a good game. I'm not a I should go back and rewatch this thing person, but man, I should go back and rewatch that without any of the stress of watching it the first time. Anyway.
All right.
Are we done? Well, are we good?
Yeah.
All right.
No, but yeah.
Vaya con Dios, Doug. Good job.
Godspeed and good luck, man. All right. Bye.
Peace.
I'm sorry that Mina is being
Mina could also try to be the silent. That would be nice. She was asleep really sweetly on the couch for most of this call, but she started, like, sleepily licking her chops, and then now she's at full alert, so who knows what's up. Maybe a parcel's been delivered, and that would be cool. But anyway, the thing is, I think I almost, though, destroyed my game and in the final
quiet.
It's not helping, though. I can yell quiet at this dog, but she's like, we're barking. Yes.
We're doing barks now.
All right, so it sounds like I'm just going to give it a second because MK's coming to appease the hound. And then we'll wrap. We're so close to the end.
We're so close to the end. You're going to finish the story, then we're going to do an outro. It's going to be
5 minutes. You could have just held for 5 minutes. And then we got to do football talk post credits because I want to talk real quick. Okay, so. I think I came very close, though, to destroying my run as the silent.